Welcome to the Filmmaker Toolkit Podcast. My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm on the craft team over at IndieWire, and I am so excited to share this conversation with Challengers director Luca Guadagnino. Challengers is so much more than a tennis movie. It is a ride. It is a rave. It is this entanglement between three highly passionate characters, and it is shown in all kinds of wonderfully cinematic ways over the course of the film. So I got to ask Luca about how he uses film form in this movie, about getting to accomplish some unfinished business from Suspiria, and about trying out some new methods of filmmaking, some storyboarding, some rehearsals, and why he did that. It's a great conversation. I learned a lot, and I really hope you enjoy it. So here is Luca Guadagnino. Sir, I would love to ask you about the tremendous use of music in this film, because it almost feels like in certain scenes it is sort of the punchline to a joke that reveals how our characters are feeling about each other or who is in a position of power or control. And I imagine that just had to take a lot of finessing and experimenting in the edit, or was it kind of in the script? I'm just curious how you approached placing music.
When we started editing the movie with the... First of all, when I got this gig, this job as a filmmaker, I immediately decided to propose to Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross to do the score. We were working while I was preparing this one on final touches on Bones and All, which was my first score with Trent and Atticus. And because that experience was wonderful and touching and all the good things that you get from new friendship, I felt that I wanted to continue this conversation with them. So I offered them to do Challengers. They luckily agreed. And then I started working on, I was shooting and editing with Marco Costa, my editor. And usually when I edit a movie where I have a score, I do not put any music where the score is supposed to be. So we basically edit with the scenes without music dry, let's say. But of course, we were working on what is the repertoire. The idea that the movie was basically built upon three big pillars of music that were the three Benjamin Britten choirs, where you have these beautiful angelic white voices of children singing these kind of like almost like Christmas carols, in a way to enveloping in this idea of the innocence and maybe innocence lost, the story of these three beautiful, complex, arresting, annoying, and yet incredibly loving characters of Tashi and Art and Patrick. And we built with Marco around this concept. We put some music here, some music there to put the right emotional temperature when we felt it needed to be with beyond the concept of the score. And we watched the movie. And I realized that the movie was playing, even without the score or by Trent and Atticus, as a very kind of fresh entertainment, to the degree that I was kind of like referring to it as a sort of the movie I wanted. I felt it was playing as if you were drinking a glass of very, very cold soda on a very scorching hot day. So that led me to think that we had to keep that level of entertainment and that level of like intoxication that you get from this kind of like rush of thirst being dominated by the freshness of a cold pop drink, like a Coca-Cola or anything. And so I called Trent and Atticus and I said, hey guys, I think this movie should play like a rave party. I think we should work on this movie musically as if you are with dancing all night through a rave to the most exciting and arresting house music. So I need you to score this movie as house music soundtrack. And like as we did in Bones and All, we did the same thing here. So we put the initials of Trent and Atticus coming in and out in the spots where we thought the music should be playing. We gave to every moment different colors in order to communicate with them and say, if it's red means this, if it's green means that. I sent an email saying, make it sexy with many X's and many Y's. And then 2 months later, they invited me here in LA to listen to their music. And it was like just fantastic. And they got it. They evolved my concept of the rave party and the house music to a level that I was so excited to listen to. The first time I listened to this was like insane and exciting and fantastic.
Oh man. So they had picture to edit to.
Yeah.
Amazing.
We did not change the edit after they gave you the music, basically.
And that I love the sort of color coding of kind of what the feeling is or kind of who's driving, because you do get a sense of music, like sort of who is in charge of a scene.
And what is the energy of each of them that they are expressing or not expressing, you know? When you hear the sound, there is the music in the sauna scene. They're steady and they're seated and they're talking and they are having the minimal gestures in their delivery and art in particular is very dry and the music is hectic as hell. And you know that the heartbeat of that music is the heartbeat of their hearts, both.
Absolutely. And just like the way that is, the way that they play it and the way that you stage it with Patrick just a little bit below, Art kind of sprawled. Like you just, there's so many wonderful, quiet examples of like, what are the power dynamics between these three people in a scene? It's very cool.
I believe that power is useless, that the desire of power is useless and leads people to the wrong decisions always. So it's interesting that we describe power dynamic. But those power dynamic between these three people, they constantly shift because they really, really want one another. They don't want power over one another.
No, and that's where the film like comes together in that sort of final crash over the net too, is they are, absolutely.
These movies, if we were in the 70s, we would say, let's play tennis, make love, not war.
That's
what this movie could be in a frame. Back in the 70s. But maybe even now should be done like that.
I mean how it's done now is pretty cool. I'm curious, like that escalating the tennis match in intensity over the course of the film and getting to this, the last 10 minutes of it, which are, I feel like psychedelic is both the wrong and the right word for it. I'm curious kind of what was the planning like for, how to modulate the tennis sequences and get to the crescendo that you get to.
For me, the tennis sequences were basically the infinite threads being needled on the finite cord of their life together. And so every point, every action, every backhand serve or anything they were playing was in a way a communication that they were giving to one another about the status of where they were in terms of their emotional journey within one another, in the intertwinement of one another. And so everything was commanded by this concept. And so every point, everything, every time we were rehearsing this, we were really asking ourselves, now that he does this and was hitting the ball from up to low, what that means in the geometry and in the grammar of the language of love between these three people. So because it escalates in a way that is unstoppable, this sense of like feisty power dynamic between the three of them that actually wants just surrender, they want the surrender of all of them, we had to become more and more intimate in the tennis, the way we wanted to be intimate within these three. But tennis is the most intimate thing for all of them. What are we talking about? Tennis, they say? Yes, we always talk about tennis. So with the intimacy of the relationship of the, let's say, call it, I'd like to call it entanglement of the three instead of the threesome, but that energy, that intimacy was to be brought on to the tennis court. And the camera had to witness that intimacy on the tennis court, the way we were witnessing that intimacy in the canteens, in the parks, in the bedrooms, in the restrooms and all of these places, in the lobbies of hotels. So for me, it was like the intensity, the increasing intensity of the tennis was driven by that. And it was fun. It was laborious, but it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, and you start the movie with like some very intimate shots of the boys sweating and
the girl like focusing on that.
Yeah.
Because those three extreme close-up shot at, I think it was 2000 frame per second speed. We had to fly a camera from Italy, by the way, who could do that because this was an old camera used in the back in the 70s and the 80s for like high-end commercials where they did slow-mo, but now they don't use it anymore. And we flew that. We were consuming tons of kilometers of film. But that is that those three close-ups belong to the very last moment of the movie. It's when one is up, one is down, and she's like looking at this crazy moment. You don't know that at the beginning.
Right. But then by the end, you understand how she's connected to both of them.
And the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. It's so cool. And I love that because it feels like such a wonderful blend of like old technology whatever you had to do to make a glass tennis court and shoot underneath the guys. Like,
you know that when I did Suspiria, I don't know if you saw the movie. In that movie, if you remember Helena Marcos, the grand witch of the company, she's underneath the academy and she's staying underneath the company. And she grasps for this kind of like virginity of these girls. And there is this shot of the hand going up. And I wanted to see the dance scene from her perspective. So I conceived a glass dance hall to look at that. And I didn't manage to get that done because we had a lot of budget constraints and I couldn't do that. And it was in my mind forever. So I said, if it wasn't dance, it's going to be tennis.
There you go. That's awesome.
But I want to use it again. I think it's an interesting point of view. I don't think it's contrived. I think it's about like cinema brings you in every places. In
yeah, exactly.
That's what I like about that.
No, and it's one of those wonderful things. The risk of sometimes sports movies is that like you get too fixated on like the score or who's serving or whatever, and just giving us a completely different perspective on it focuses us where we need to be, which is with these people.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because of the nature of this, do you have to like pre-visit to hell like way in advance?
We did not pre-visit anything, basically.
Oh,
we did storyboarded all the tennis. We did shot the moment in which we become the ball, and the ball is the desire being thrown from one another, so we become the desire. Once we have shot that, we had to do some temp previs of that, but already been shot. But basically we storyboarded all the tennis, and I never storyboard anything. I did not storyboard the most complex films I did, like Suspiria. But in this case, I felt the precision of the script and the structure of the script needed to really be very, very carefully encompassed in the movie. So I wanted to make sure that everything was there. Also, like, I don't know how many shots we did for tennis, but many. So like, I had to be careful about not forgetting to cover what I needed to cover.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, that's how is it to sort of onboard a new way of working? And
I'm up for everything. I'm up for new. And I'm up for trying things that I never tried. I want to prove myself, because at the end of the day, it's all about a challenge with myself, that as a filmmaker, I really can at least try to prove myself against or with different ways of filmmaking, different tools of filmmaking, different texture and genre. I don't think that for me as a filmmaker, I have to pigeonhole myself into a place that is something that defines me. I want to be defined by the sheer possibilities of cinema.
I'm curious if there are any sort of new things you tried, particular muscles you flexed, that you would like to carry over into future work?
I did a lot of rehearsals, and I'm doing that now because I never did before. I'm doing in the next movie I'm doing. I guess, I mean, that was my second movie shot in America, so I'm ready to do another one in America, maybe one day.
Yeah, what do you like about rehearsals?
Usually I don't like rehearsals, but in this case it was interesting to bond, to find the bonding between the three of them, between all of us, to kind of have fun seeing the possibilities of what we were going to after, and eventually to be on set ready and done. So in this case, was a very good experience. In the movie I made afterwards, which is Queer, we just did not rehearse at all. It depends.
There are so many wonderful visual jokes in this movie where either we're paying attention to how Zendaya's head moves or how the crowd moves and she does not, or, you know, just the deterioration of that poor Aston Martin billboard. And I'm curious, kind of, is that something that you are picking up on at the script level? Is that something that you kind of find when you go to a location and you're like, this would be funny? I'm curious how you think about like injecting those visual moments.
I think I am of two schools. I am of the school of really kind of like building the geography of the movie and the landscape of the movie way in advance when I'm prepping the movie. And I think of my movies all the time while I'm doing them. So now I'm preparing this movie called After the Hunt. And honestly, I think about that all the time. And I would think about a gesture I think should be happening in the movie, a color I want to see in the movie, a shape of a room that I want to be portraying or music that could be good playing. So I do that a lot. But at the same time, I learned that when you are on set, the way in which Bertolucci used to quote Jean Renoir, you need to leave the door open to reality on set. You need to make things happen in a way that you didn't control, didn't shape before. So I am in between either ways. I think because I am kind of a precise kind of person, I would be disappointed with myself if I was shallow to let things happen without preparing myself.
Sure.
But at the same time, because I like the idea of the unpredictability and the life itself, I would be a bit dull if I was sticking to my plan and not being able to see how something that is maybe a disruption or a surprise can be embraced instead of being rejected while you are shooting it. So I am in between both. I'm taking the better of both, I guess.
The answer to this might also be no, but I'm curious, this film was delayed a little bit because of the strikes.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if after the strikes you went back to it in a different way, or, you know, you continue to learn and grow and evolve as an artist and coming back to it after a little bit of a hiatus. I'm curious how that was for you.
No, I mean, I was basically, once the strike hit us, I was editing Queer and prepping more stuff. So for me, Challengers was my son or my child and was there. I knew I had to wait for it to be brought out in the world, but I did not honestly thought a lot about it while I was making other stuff. And then I watched the movie with two audiences. The first one was when I saw it again with the London premiere audience, and the second time with the LA premiere audience. And I said goodbye to the movie when I finished the movie in Los Angeles a few days ago. I said, okay, that's my last time. I might not see it again.
Just because, like, you had the experience you needed to have with it?
My children need to grow up in the world.
Yeah, makes sense. There are certain sequences in this movie where it feels like there's more sort of the filmmaking apparatus on display, like you slow down time or the lighting gets a very particular way. And then there are certain times where it really feels like the filmmaking is just basking in the glow of these three people and you know, the talent of the actors who are portraying them. And I'm curious how you think about that balance of being sort of very formally forward versus being a little bit more invisible, if that makes sense.
I think being invisible is one of the most striking way of being formally forward. So I try to balance things in depending on the movie. I think a movie like Bones and All is a movie where I am invisible beyond the visibility of the subject matter and the cannibalism. But in terms of the cinematic infrastructure of the movie, I try to be invisible. In this case, I thought it was more about, as I said before, fleshing out the profound intimacy of these three people in and out the court. So that had to come with a certain sense of a hectic pace and visual flair that could be kind of reflecting that.
Yeah, and it's in the structure of the script too, that kind of momentum.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. You have to know where you go away from something and come back to that, what happens. It's a very inspiring script because it tells you a lot about how you can film it and how you can edit it. Often scripts are, you go against them to film them or you go against them to edit them. You rewrite them when you edit. In this case, it was it channeled a lot of inspiration for me and for my editor.
Yeah, I was going to ask about sort of, it feels like there is just sort of a rhythm that's baked into this movie that you don't necessarily need to find in the edit. But how was the edit in terms of, did that take any tweaking? Was, you're looking for ways to compress or balance scenes at all, or did it sort of feel on rails?
You know, when I finished the editing of the movie, my first cut was 3 minutes longer than the final cut. 3 minutes. It took us an hour to go down 3 minutes, and the movie was locked. So no, it was really like very precise script. I have admiration. Justin is fantastic.
Awesome.
I mean, Justin Kuritzka is the writer.
Is there anything about sort of your preparation or your process as a filmmaker that I have not asked you about that you would like to talk about with Challengers?
Well, I mean, there is the obvious part of the story that is how we prepare the actors to do the thing. I knew that the bodies had to change. All of them are very beautiful people and all of them are very harmonic bodies, but they were not tennis player bodies. So I was very adamant that all of them could get that kind of muscles that are screaming on screen, champion of tennis. So I was kind of like adamant about that. Uh-huh. And they were very generous in giving, in embracing this process. They were really training so hard and so much, and the food that they were going through was so much about building lean muscle and make the lean muscle look like lean muscle from a tennis champion, not like a bodybuilder or a kind. So that was incredible and really, really, really riveting, because I would have felt small if we had going, if we were going to make a movie about this thing, these tennis players and being the portrait of some big tennis players and then not nailing it.
No, and it has to go, it just has to fit with the way you were talking about, like the sort of the geometry of the court and the visual language of the film. It,
yeah.
You could tell if it was off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sir, thank you so much for your time. I really
appreciate you. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm very happy we did that.